This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Tariffs on booze, is that going to happen? Senator Rand Paul says, look, no one in Kentucky is coming up to me and saying, please put tariffs on alcohol, please. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, 855-839-1210. I guess, you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of tariffs, as you know. I understand what the president is trying to do, though, with the reciprocity issue here, trying to get an even playing field, a level playing field. If that's what happens, if that's what all this achieves, great. What I worry about, though, like anything else, is that it's going to cause a situation where what could have been something that levels the playing field just makes it worse. But I'm going to give it, look, he ran on this, he got elected. He didn't hide from this. He told everybody he wanted tariffs. He told everybody he was going to put tariffs in, big, beautiful tariffs, and he won. And he won by a landslide, and he won with the Electoral College. I think he certainly has the right now to push those policies that he was very transparent about with the American people on what he wanted to do. So I'm going to trust him. I'm going to trust that he's got a plan here. I'm going to trust that. And for me, I know that he wants to go out with history looking at him as an incredibly popular president. He doesn't want to go out as being an unpopular president. So from that perspective, I don't think he would want to do something that would cause economic harm to America. Today with the NATO secretary, he said, you know, we've been ripped off for years and we're not going to be ripped off anymore. This is the president in the Oval Office today with the NATO secretary general, cut number four.
No, I'm not. Look, we've been ripped off for years, and we're not going to be ripped off anymore. No, I'm not going to bend at all on aluminum or steel or cars. We're not going to bend. We've been ripped off as a country for many, many years. We've been subjected to costs that we shouldn't be subjected to. In the case of Canada, we're spending $200 billion a year to subsidize Canada. I love Canada. I love the people of Canada. I have many friends in Canada. The great one, Wayne Gretzky, the great. Hey, how good is Wayne Gretzky? He's the great one. But we have, I know many people from Canada that are good friends of mine. But, you know, the United States can't subsidize a country for $200 billion a year. We don't need their cars. We don't need their energy. We don't need their lumber. We don't need anything that they give. We do it because we want to be helpful, but it comes a point when you just can't do that. You have to run your own country. And to be honest with you, Canada only works as a state. It doesn't. We don't need anything they have. As a state, it would be one of the great states anyway. This would be the most incredible country visually. If you look at a map, they drew an artificial line right through it between Canada and the U.S. Just a straight artificial line. Somebody did it a long time ago, many, many decades ago. And makes no sense. It's so perfect. as a great and cherished state, keeping O Canada, the national anthem. I love it. I think it's great. Keep it. But it'll be for the state, one of our greatest states, maybe our greatest state. But why should we subsidize another country for $200 billion? It costs us $200 billion a year. And again, we don't need their lumber. We don't need their energy. We have more than they do. We don't need anything. We don't need their cars. I'd much rather make the cars here. And there's not a thing that we need. Now, there'll be a little disruption, but it won't be very long. But they need us. We really don't need them. And we have to do this. I'm sorry. We have to do this. Yes.
All right. Well, look, you know, we're going to hope it all works out, and we're going to hope it leads to good outcomes. Or if nothing else, Canada being the 51st state, in which case that would be, I think, strategically in America's best interest for national security purposes when it comes to oil and natural gas. No question about that. He also talked about today the investments that are going on in the United States of America because of all these countries that are now investing in America. That's the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, VeneriaDental.com. Here's him talking about the major investments. Cut number 7.
Many yesterday, General Motors was in. They want to invest $60 billion. The people from Facebook were in yesterday. They're going to invest $60 billion by the end of the year. Other people are talking about numbers. Apple, as you know, a few days ago announced $500 billion investment. They're going to build their plants in the United States, which, as you know, almost all of their plants are in China. Now they're building in the United States. Look, the reason is two things. Number one, the election, November 5th. And the other thing is tariffs. I think probably in that order. But Tim Cook came in and he announced $500 million is a lot when you think about it, right?
Sure.
Well, I would have been happy with $500 million, but it's $500 billion investment by Apple in the United States. And that's because of the election result, and it's because of the tariffs and the tax incentives, too. You know, tariffs and tax incentives.
So there you go. That's what the president's saying right now. And that was a lot of it. Well, he also talked about peace in the Oval Office, obviously, with what they're looking for with Russia. And we need to have a resolution here and a real ceasefire that needs to occur. No question about that. And the auto pan, I went through that with you earlier today. So I think the big fact of the matter is, with all of this, is that you've got a lot of people who are pushing for the American people to give him time, to trust what he's trying to do here, and to understand that this is a long-term plan. So considering he won and he ran on this and he's got the support of workers and working-class people in this country who feel like the country has been ripped off, and in my mind, since he does not want to go out as an unpopular president, I understand what the Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon said when he talked about this. I played it earlier, but it's worth playing again. Why they understand what Trump is trying to do with tariffs. Cut number 10.
What can you tell us in terms of your reaction and the impact of tariffs on the economy and your business?
Well, I was at the business roundtable yesterday, and I'd start, Maria, by just observing that one of the things that I do like is that the president is engaged with the business community.
Yeah.
The administration is engaged with the business community. And that's a different experience than what we've had over the course of the last 4 years. I'd also observe, you know, his sense of optimism in the engagement yesterday at the BRT. I think the business community understands what the president is trying to do with tariffs. Now, the business community is always going to want lower tariffs everywhere in the world. At the moment, there's some uncertainty. The market's digesting that, but we're going to have to watch and see how this all plays out.
All right. There you go. So we'll see. Okay, as we continue along the show here tonight, I got a lot more to get to, including some breaking news for you as well. And but I want to mention, you know, we have our Travis Manion Foundation Radiothon next Friday. That's always a lot of fun. I always enjoy doing that. I'm really looking forward to that. And the triumphant return of Matt DeSantis to studio. Not me, though. I'll be there for one day and one day only. So you'll be able to come see me for that for one day and one day only. All right. Listen, we got a lot more to come. It's our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
This auto pen issue, though, with Biden is, in my opinion, the biggest political scandal of my lifetime. It really is. There's this this clip when Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is saying he confronts Biden about the liquid natural gas export ban. And Biden's like, huh? What are you talking about? Well, I didn't put any liquid natural gas export ban. Now, the problem is he may have and just forgot. Because wouldn't you then, if you were President Biden at that moment, go back and say, who the hell put in a liquid ban on liquid natural gas export? It wasn't me. Who did it? Find out who did it and then fire that person. And then, but it's also possible Biden forgot 5 minutes later that he just said he never put in a ban on liquid natural gas exports. See, Biden's cognitive decline, his mush of a brain, which the judge, the special counsel, even said, you know, there's no judge out there that would ever convict this guy because he's just he's a crazy old man. Using the Uncle June defense from The Sopranos. I'm just a senile old man. I don't remember anything. Well, Trump today at the Oval Office says, you know, what's with this guy? He's signing thousands and thousands of documents with the auto pen. What's up with that? What's that about? The auto pen in the White House is supposed to be there for signing of, you know, you send a letter to the president. Dear Mr. President, would love you to come to my daughter's graduation. And of course, he's not going to go. So they write a letter back. I'm so touched. I'm honored. Unfortunately, my schedule doesn't allow it. And, you know, that's what the auto pen's for. It's not for signing things like a ban on liquid natural gas. Or pardoning Anthony Fauci and his little band of merry little gain-of-function minions. The auto pen signature appears on most official documents, though, which is a huge, huge problem. And in talking to Congressman Scott Perry about this, and he said the same thing as Pennsylvania Representative Perry, we got to have an investigation into this. And Congress needs to investigate this. And we need to haul people before Congress and ask them the questions of who was responsible for getting these automatic signatures on these documents. Did the president know about it? So in the case of the liquid natural gas export ban, did Biden forget that he did it? Did he forget after he was told that he did it? In which case, that's why they never undid it. Because the entire time during that election, I never could believe this. You're trying to win Pennsylvania. It's the must-win state, and you still have a ban on liquid natural gas exports from the oil-rich, natural gas-rich state of Pennsylvania. And I said a million times during the campaign, I said, I don't understand this. This makes no sense. Why don't you immediately push that away? So let's assume Biden, when he said that, the Speaker Mike Johnson said, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. I don't know who did it. Then wouldn't you rush back to the White House immediately say, or not even have to rush back, you just turn to somebody and go find out who the hell did that. I want him in my office as soon as I get back. So either Biden was lying to Mike Johnson, Biden forgot that he did put in the ban on liquid natural gas, or Biden forgot that he told Mike Johnson he didn't know about it and then meant to do something about it, but then just forgot to do anything about it. Either way, it just shows you the extent of the guy's cognitive decline. A majority of official documents signed by President Joe Biden allegedly used the same auto pen signature, reinvigorating concerns over the former president's mental acuity and if he actually ordered the signature of relevant legal documents. Whoever controlled the auto pen controlled the presidency, said the oversight project by the Conservative Heritage Foundation. They control the presidency. We gathered every document we could find with Biden's signature over the course of the presidency. All used the same auto pen signature, except for the announcement that the former president was dropping out of the race last year. And it's the cover up and the scandal of Biden's decline. That's what we're talking about here. The cover up and scandal of Biden's decline. And people probably kept it covered up because they were in charge. They were in power over this. And they loved it. They loved being they loved being in charge, and they loved being in power over the whole situation. So why would they change anything on this? Somebody should ask Gavin Newsom about that next time they go on his podcast. Oh, you know, speaking of California, I wanted to mention this story here about California. So Mel Gibson, the actor, who is now the head of the President's Commission on Hollywood. It's like Mel Gibson and Sylvester Stallone. Mel Gibson is barred from owning a firearm. And this woman at the Department of Justice, her name was Elizabeth Oyer, former public defender, was appointed as the Justice Department's pardon attorney in April of 2022 under Obama, says she was fired last Friday because she refused to sign off on a recommendation to restore Mel Gibson's gun rights. This is from Reason.com. The movie star and director who supported Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential election was designated as one of the administration's three ambassadors to Hollywood, along with John Voight and Sylvester Stallone. Now, Mel Gibson lost the right to own firearms because of a misdemeanor domestic violence conviction. Now, the pardon attorney who resigned presented the episode as a conflict between public safety and political favoritism. New York Times framed the story the exact same way. But the incident also illustrates how difficult it is for people who've lost their Second Amendment rights as a result of criminal convictions, a category that includes, theoretically, the president himself, to regain those rights even when there are no grounds to think they pose a threat to public safety. So this was back in March of 2011. You know, Gibson pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor battery charge involving his girlfriend, got 36 months of probation, and the deal allowed him to avoid jail time, but his plea triggered an ancillary penalty under 18 U.S.C. 922 G9, which makes it a felony for anyone who has been convicted in any court of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence to receive or possess a firearm. A lifetime ban. Now, those who advocate for this turn around and go, well, that's because all these domestic abusers are going to go out and get a firearm and kill their exes the minute that they have the chance to do so. Well, that's stupid. There's no evidence to point to that. There's no evidence to say Mel Gibson or any of the other people are dangerous. But if that's the case, there's lots of ways to kill somebody. You don't just need a gun. I mean, it's not like without guns, nobody ever kills anybody. People have lots of methods to kill somebody. If they really want to kill somebody, not being able to legally purchase a firearm is certainly not going to stop them, because they could also, wait for it, illegally buy a firearm in this country. As Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett noted in an opinion she wrote as an appeals court judge, the constitutionality of the latter prohibition is doubtful. Barrett dissented from a 2019 decision in which the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit upheld the application of that section to a manufacturer of therapeutic shoes and footwear inserts who had pleaded guilty to mail fraud. Mail fraud. You can never have a gun again because you pled guilty to mail fraud. History demonstrates that legislatures have the power to prohibit dangerous people from possessing guns, she wrote, but that power extends only to people who are dangerous. Now, I don't know what it means to be a dangerous person. I mean, theoretically, we're all dangerous, right? Theoretically, anybody can be dangerous. So you're probably talking about somebody who's imminently dangerous. Like somebody you have to really worry about in the moment. I mean, I could be dangerous 5 minutes from now. Who the hell knows? Depends on my mood. But I'm obviously not going to be a violent person. So then again, define dangerous. What do you mean by that? You know, what do you mean by dangerous? The Supreme Court's 2022 decision in the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin added heft to that argument by clarifying that gun control laws must be consistent with this nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation when they impinge on conduct covered by the plain text of the Second Amendment. 2023, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit ruled that Section 922G, this is the one that keeps Mel Gibson from having a gun and millions like him, failed that test as applied to Brian Range, a Pennsylvania man who pleaded guilty to food stamp fraud. Look, I'm no fan of food stamp fraud, but like, come on. You're not going to let the guy ever have his Second Amendment rights back because of food stamp fraud? Stop. Based on similar reasoning, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit last year overturned that Section 992G conviction of Stephen Duarte, a California man who had lost his gun rights because of a nonviolent criminal record. Without such judicial intervention, though, prohibited persons like these have little recourse. They theoretically can ask the attorney general to restore their Second Amendment rights. The attorney general has that discretion to do so, but it's a whole big thing. It's a whole big to do, and good luck with that. And then that responsibility has also been delegated to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which Congress has barred from considering such applications. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I love that. One of my favorite T-shirts is ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Should be a convenience store, not a government agency. Although federal law provides a means for the relief of firearms disabilities, ATF's annual appropriation since October of 1992 has prohibited the expending of any funds to investigate or act upon applications for relief from federal firearms disabilities submitted by individuals. As long as this provision is included in current ATF appropriations, ATF cannot act upon applications for relief from federal firearms disabilities submitted by individuals. That's a whole lot of mumbo jumbo. Translation is, you're screwed. If the ATF cannot act on such applications, can people with disqualifying criminal records seek relief in federal court? No. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled in the 2002 case United States v. Bean. So what do you do? You got nothing. You got nothing. You're just screwed because you made a mistake. You did something wrong for the rest of your life. So in this case, this woman, this pardon attorney, going back to this, said she was working. She was assigned to a working group charged with identifying people who deserve to have their Second Amendment rights restored despite criminal records that made it illegal for them to own guns. It was an unusual assignment for the Office of the Pardon Attorney, which typically handles requests for clemency and recommends candidates for pardons or commutations. And she didn't want to do it because she didn't believe that anybody should get their gun rights back. Well, why not? Because lefties believe that if there's any possibility they have of keeping you from ever being able to own a gun, they should immediately seize it and take it and be done with it. Because now you're one more person that they can keep unarmed in this country, legally, of course. So that doesn't surprise me in the least. But Mel Gibson and many others like him are not dangerous people. The article says, while the loss of that right might not matter much to someone with armed taxpayer-funded protection like these judges and these politicians and everybody else, the same cannot be said of ordinary people who are legally barred from possessing firearms, even though they have never done anything to suggest they are inclined to violence. And that is the problem with this situation. Let me read that. U.S. military spends 8 times more on Viagra than gender-affirming care. Okay. Now, first of all, if I'm serving my country and I need a little help in that department, which I don't serve my country. See what I did there? But if I did, then I would say the government should give me my, you know, my little blue pill or the white generic version of this. It's not even a question for me, in my opinion. The judge overseeing the case against the Defense Department's firing of transgender service members revealed that the military spends 8 times more on erectile dysfunction medication than on gender-affirming care. First of all, gender-affirming care is one of those euphemisms the left use for chopping off body parts and giving hormone blockers to kids, puberty blockers to kids, which don't, of course, actually block puberty. It just delays it. It messes with the kids, and they're incredibly harmful, which is why they're banned in European countries now, thank God. As is also these gender-affirming practices for children. But while discussing military spending with the Department of Defense attorney for the ongoing Talbot v. Trump case, Judge Anna Reyes said the DOD spends approximately $5.2 million annually on medical care for service members with gender dysphoria. Comparatively, the DOD spends $42 million a year on medication for service members with erectile dysfunction. Hey, listen, a big part of the reason why men, I'm told, and I don't know this for a fact, sometimes need help in that department is because of stress. War is stressful. Serving your country is stressful. I get it. I understand that point. Again, I don't personally know if that's true, but I've read that stress is a big indicator of this. But really, what it comes down to is this is why the Secretary of Defense doesn't want and the president doesn't want transgender service members serving in our military. And I don't think they should be in our military. This is not a social club. Military is not a social club. You want to live your life as a transgender person? Knock yourself out. You shouldn't be in the military, though. Just like I would say that if you are physically unfit, you shouldn't be in the military. If you are a weak and fragile, you should not be. I could not be in the military. I'm weak and fragile. I'm constantly breaking things. But if you have a little problem in the area of, you know, woohoo, like, you know, that would be the stress of probably being involved in war and conflict and everything else. I get it. I understand that. But there's also other issues, too, that lead to that: age and, you know, cholesterol levels and sleep apnea. There's all kinds of things that should do with that. One has nothing to do with the other, by the way. One, it's like saying, well, you spend $42 trillion a year on blood pressure medication. What does that have to do with transgender, gender-affirming care? Either you think the military should be in the business of having transgender soldiers or not. You can't equate that with what they spend on Viagra or any of the other erectile dysfunction drugs. Not that I know what they are, but I've heard there's other names out there, too. But the Viagra spending was a stupid point by the judge to make. At one point, attorneys had to admit to the judge they never read articles which were included as evidence. The judge said that they had cherry-picked and egregiously misquoted studies put forward by the Pentagon on transgender people decreasing the lethality of the military. Just for the record, I would be more worried about soldiers who need help in that department of rising to the occasion, not getting the help they need, rising to the occasion, in terms of us having a strong fighting force, because those soldiers would then be even more stressed out and even more distracted, if you know what I mean. But one has nothing to do with the other. This is what I mean. This is another case of a dumb federal judge, like the federal judge who earlier today blocked the Trump administration from firing all these people in the federal government. I mean, this is not your job here. What does this have to do with anything? In response to this, the Pentagon saying transgender people decrease the lethality of the military. They do. People with erectile dysfunction, however, don't. Now, you could still be pretty lethal, but it's also about other things, too. Unicohesion and... There's a lot of other factors to this. But again, one does not have anything to do with the other. If, for example, somebody has trouble sleeping and they get a sleeping aid or whatever, or they're given, I don't know, Valium or whatever it is, I don't know. And you go, wait, you're spending all this money on sleeping aids, but you're not spending money on transgender-affirming care? Okay, and... But you spend all this money giving the military members golf lessons, but you won't spend this money on transgender care. The argument is not about whether or not the government should be spending the money. The argument's about what it should be spending the money on. Hey, the government's not turning around and going, ugh, you know, we really can't afford this transgender care. They're saying that they don't want transgender soldiers in the military. The Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, said transgender people lack warrior ethos, are liars, lack integrity, are not humble, are selfish, and can't meet physical and mental fitness requirements. Well, that's his opinion. You can disagree with that, but he's the Secretary of Defense. It's like saying, well, if he had easily said that instead of transgender, if he had said weak people, physically weak people, lack warrior ethos, are liars, lack integrity, are not humble, are selfish, and can't meet physical and mental requirements, be like, all right, well, that's kind of mean, but that's like your opinion, dude, to quote the dude from The Big Lebowski. But that's not the point. The point is that the commander-in-chief doesn't want transgender people serving in the military. And I'm sorry, but that's the right the commander-in-chief has, and it's something he also said on the campaign trail, and he got elected. Hegseth's point about the integrity thing was that you're going out there and you're lying. You're saying a man's assertion that he is a woman and his requirement that others honor this falsehood is not consistent with the humility and selflessness required of a service member. Military service members must be reserved, or service must be reserved for those mentally and physically fit for duty. So the judge turns around and goes, so you're saying that people with gender dysphoria can't be honest, humble, or have integrity. You think that's demeaning to people with gender dysphoria? And the attorney said, I can't answer that question. Well, let's also break down what gender dysphoria is, which is a mental condition where you think you're in the wrong body. At one time that was considered to be a psychological illness. The question that I think the better question would be, what do you do with people who have mental illness in the military, because the military will not accept people if they have certain kinds of mental illness for the exact same reason, being that they could be a threat to themselves or to the people they're serving with. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean here, but if you have people with severe mental illness dispatched overseas, that's not in their best interest any more than it's in the best interest of the people that are serving with that person. And so I think, again, this is one of those areas where you got to turn around and you got to say, if the American people knew what the president felt on the issue, and they did, and the president of the United States, in his capacity as president, turned around and said, this is what we're going to do, then the president of the United States gets to make that determination. And I don't think the fact that we have a lot of soldiers who need Viagra is really the issue. But if I was thinking about World War III with Putin and a potential nuclear I might have a time, you know, rising to the occasion, raising the flag, if you know what I mean. Now, on the note of Russia, by the way, Vladimir Putin has come out and he said, and this is what the president was echoing in the Oval Office earlier, Putin says Russia is in favor of a ceasefire proposal, but there is nuance. In his first public remarks on the proposed 30-day ceasefire in Ukraine, President Vladimir Putin said Russia is for it, but he wants his own security guarantees. Putin raised questions regarding a 30-day ceasefire during a press briefing in Moscow on Thursday. This is what the president of Russia said, quote, "It seems to me it would be very good for the Ukrainian side to reach a truce for at least 30 days, and we are for it, but there's a nuance." His concerns regard Russia's Kursk region, where Ukrainian forces pushed into last year in a surprise offensive, but in recent weeks have seen Russian forces retake significant ground. If we stop the hostilities for 30 days, what does that mean? Does it mean that everyone who is there will leave without a fight, or the Ukrainian leadership will give them an order to lay down their arms and just surrender? How will it be? It's not clear, Putin said. Putin said he also wants guarantees that during a 30-day ceasefire, Ukraine will not regroup, and he wondered who would determine if there were any violations of a ceasefire. These are all issues that require careful investigation from both sides. Putin suggested Russia should talk with Trump to discuss his concerns, while adding, but the idea itself is to end this conflict with peaceful means. We support it, he said. At the top of his remarks, the president thanked Trump for his attention to Ukraine's settlement by saying, we believe that this ceasefire should lead to a long-term peace and eliminate the initial cause of this crisis. And you have the special envoy led by Steve Witkoff, who landed in Moscow today for discussions on the proposed 30-day ceasefire in Ukraine. Continuing efforts to press Russia to agree to a ceasefire and stop its brutal war against Ukraine. That's what Caroline Levitt had said. So that's good. Peace is good. We should all want peace. Said things are hopefully going okay, and that's a good thing.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You got Doge. All right, so you have Doge and you have this notion of we're going to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Great, good, eliminate it. Get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse as much as you possibly can. Then they come out and they say, what if we give every American $5,000? And people said, oh, it's going to lead to inflation because you're going to put more money into the economy and people are going to go out there and start spending it. And, you know, that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. I think the difference, though, in terms of that versus what happened during COVID, when the government put out massive amounts of spending designed to put money in people's pockets for the purposes of kickstarting the economy, is the government was spending a ton of money and people got COVID money. Yes, they went out and spent it on a lot of different things, but the economy was not moving in the sense that you didn't have as many transactional, as much transactional use of that money. You had a lot of people buying crap, a lot of crap that came from China, made in China on Amazon.com, but you didn't really have a lot of people going out back then. They would get money in the form of COVID relief money, and they would get their money to keep their keep them going. And then, but the federal government at the time spending over $1 trillion, and people were going, oh, I got money. I guess I'll go on Amazon.com and buy something made in China versus I'll take my family on a vacation, because you couldn't. Where are you going to go during COVID? Where are you going to go? We snuck out. We broke out. We wound up leaving New Jersey to go to Deep Creek Lake, Maryland. I was waiting for, I don't know, some sort of like a SWAT team to jump out of the woods and pull me over on the road and pound my car. It never happened, obviously, but really, where are we going to go? So you weren't putting money back into the economy, essentially. You couldn't go to restaurants. You couldn't go to bars. A lot of restaurants have that stupid 25% capacity. Again, I'm talking about in a lot of places around the country. So like in Philly, they had a 25% capacity. I walked by a restaurant in Philadelphia a couple months ago. I haven't been able to walk, obviously, because of my foot surgery, but I could scoot past it now. But walk past this restaurant, and it had closed somewhere around 2022, I think, and had a sign on the door that said 25% capacity, masks must be worn at all times, you must wait in line, you'll be called in. And my God, it's like dystopian, you know? And you wonder why so many of those places went out of business, despite the fact that they had COVID relief funds. So you're getting money. What do you do with it? Well, people spend it. A lot of people spent it. Some people saved it, but a lot of people spent it. And the argument was you're putting too much money into the economy. That's leading to inflation, all this inflationary spending. I don't think it's the same thing. If you say we're going to give every American citizen $5,000 of their own money back, or $2,500 of their own money back, we're going to cut so much waste, fraud, and abuse, and we're going to put money back in people's pockets. Because a lot of people are going to take that money, take the family on vacation, go out to dinner, go out to the movies, whatever. And now you're recirculating that money throughout the entire economy, and that's a good thing. Now you're the waitress, the waiter, the server, whoever. And you're talking about no tax on tips. Well, they're going to get they're getting your tips because you're going out to dinner, and maybe you can't right now. A lot of families can't afford to do that, so that hurts mom and pop businesses. That hurts small business restaurants. That hurts a lot of different things. Maybe you're saying, "Well, I really love going on vacation. Can't afford a vacation right now. Can't do it. Got to wait. Got to be now." You get $2,500 back. Go. All right, let's go on vacation. I mean, hell, I'm not a big fan of restricting what people can do with that money, but it would be great if you could just encourage people to maybe use that money domestically. Like, hey, take the family for a week in the Poconos, so down the Jersey Shore for a week. Although $2,500 is not going to get you very far at the Jersey Shore these days for a week, but you can try. You do it. And now you're putting that money back in. And then you don't have inflation, because it's not just simply a matter of people just buying a bunch of crap. It's a matter of people putting money in the economy, and then other people are going to take that money, get money, and use that money. Some people then will invest that money. Some people will spend that money. Some people will save that money. But some people will hire people with that money. And that's a good thing. That's how you get an economy roaring again, in my opinion. As long as you back it with cutting government. You see, that was the mistake of the Biden era. They made a lot of mistakes back then. Or whoever was pulling the strings of the Biden puppet machine made a lot of mistakes, is that they're spending $1 trillion. They're putting all this money out there. And you can't, of course, the inflation soars. But the other thing is, let's not forget what the Federal Reserve was doing back then, is it was printing money, this quantitative easing nonsense, money that we didn't have. And it was just giving that money to people, but it wasn't money we actually had. This would be concrete money because it would actually come from something. Meaning that it would come from cuts that the government is making, identifying as waste, fraud, and abuse, and then giving that back to the taxpayers who were paying for the waste, fraud, and abuse. It's my money. So give me back my money. Let me see what I can do with it. I bet you I can do better. I bet you I can make that money go further than you can. How much you want to bet? I bet you I can make that money go further than I don't mean you listening. I mean the government can. Absolutely. You know, I was reading a story about, they were saying how a lot of people in this country right now are looking at the price of groceries and they're trying to make cuts and they're trying to think about what they want to do and how they're going to get by. And they're happy that the price of eggs have gone down, but they know the price of eggs are going to probably go back up and they're trying to make this. The other thing is that for a lot of people, it's just simply a matter of scaling back on what they're buying, which has a huge economic impact. Here's what I mean. You go to the grocery store. And you're buying ground beef, but you're not buying steaks. Well, somewhere out there, there's ranchers who are making steaks who are losing money. And butcher shops are losing money. As you start cutting back on the quality of products, or you decide that you're going to do, or maybe you're not doing takeout, or maybe all those things have downward effects. So I don't know how anybody could really be against giving people their money back. I don't mean printing money that has no value. I mean, giving people their money back instead of allowing it to be wasted by a massive federal bureaucracy that does nothing other than just completely wash it go away, or print transgender comic books in Peru, or create transgender lab mice in the lab. Ultimate Fighting Transgender Lab Mice. Sounds like a great cover band name, doesn't it? No, I'm all for that. Give people their money back. It's what needs to happen here. And if we can do that, we'll achieve something really special. Because remember, behind all of this, behind the whole idea of the economy getting moving and why I think it's going to be different this time is, at the same time, the Biden administration was spending $1 trillion of money it didn't have. You had quantitative easing going on. People couldn't go anywhere and really spend that money other than buying material objects, a lot of which are made overseas. But the other fact is that at the very same time, the Biden administration was also doing everything it possibly could to end oil and natural gas in this country. So energy prices were about to soar. They weren't, because people weren't driving anywhere, back to the point about COVID where you couldn't go anywhere. But then when people started to drive again, we realized all of a sudden we didn't have enough oil and natural gas to keep up. The Biden administration was saying, oh, record supply. Not the case. Not the case at all. That's why it will be very different this time.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.